Welcome into the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis, on the Push Accept Podcast, joined today again with Donnie Miller. How are you doing, Donnie?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am good. You know, we were just pouring one out on the floor for our fallen comrades in Colin Weatherwags and Brad Wells, because they apparently must be dead because they're joining us on the podcast. So
yeah, we might be in trouble. Brad, I don't know what happened to Brad.
Yeah, I mean, Brad's busy. I mean, he's got kids, he's got Little League, and he's got a life and stuff. So, like, I can understand, but when we don't get to hear from him for more than 2 days, we kind of worry. And then Colin's getting stuck on a 12-hour shift, so can't really do much about that. So,
Brad will make his debut soon, hopefully.
I can see Brad being, like, around one day, and no one else is around. He's like, guys, come on, like, great podcast. And it's like, well, we're all not around. And it's like, well, you know, it's going to be like that type of day that no one else is able to do and only Brad can. So
maybe he's just scared to do it. Like, he's making excuses.
He could. So everyone, all of our listeners, should go onto Twitter and tweet at Brad Wells. I don't know what his Twitter handle you make, but we should all tweet at him and tell him to get on the podcast. He doesn't have to be scared. He's among friends. And if he makes a bad trade, we'll just yell at him on here. So it's not a big deal. Do you know his Twitter handle so we can all go out and tweet at him?
No. I think he changed it recently. It's something B_Wells something. Might be 11.
We will find it. And while we're doing that, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
It's at Donnie Miller FWFB, spelled with a Y.
Once again, thank you for that, Donnie. Brad Wells is at @BradWells_8. Does cap locks and stuff, does that matter? For tweets, like if you have a lowercase W and his is a capital W, does that matter or no? I don't use.
I think when you search it, it should come up no matter what.
Fair enough. So at @BradWells_8, everyone go tweet at Brad Wells, tell him to get on the show. And in the meanwhile, you can find me on Twitter at @BBrennisFWFB. Not going to spell my last name because we went through that conversation last week.
Maybe they're new listeners.
I think you'll be able to find me because there's only so many people with FWFB in their Twitter handle. So,
yeah, that's true too.
Obviously, we're the Push Accept podcast. We're going to be coming and bringing you trades. So we actually have a couple of trades to go and discuss today, Donnie. And why don't we jump right in and let's start with the first trade. And this actually involves you, I believe. And this is you traded Alex Bregman for Christian Yelich. This is a six-keeper, 10-team league. It's head-to-head with total bases. So, what were your thoughts when you had this deal, and what made you accept it?
So for this deal, I regretted it after I accepted it, I'm pretty sure, because I immediately needed a third baseman again, but I really just took it because I've never really owned Yelich, and I've owned Bregman on a few teams, and so I guess I just wanted something different. But Yelich is going to have more runs in RBIs, so I think that also was part of it on why I lean that way, since like speed and power-wise, they're probably pretty close. Bregman, a little bit more power, but pretty close otherwise.
I mean, personally, I think that Bregman is a better keeper, but I can understand because it is a total base league, and Yelich is likely to be hitting higher in the order, which means he's going to get more at bats, which could be more helpful in a head-to-head league. Obviously, there's upside people want to see with Yelich that we haven't got to see, but I don't really have an issue with this trade, even though I prefer the Bregman side. And you made it sound like you do too, other than the fact that you haven't had Yelich and kind of want him. But then you, unfortunately, didn't have a third baseman to bring that back. So you had to kind of scramble. So
yeah, and the thing is, I would rather, like, just if you were saying, like, they were both hitting from the same spot, like if they were both hitting from the two spot, I'd rather have Alex Bregman because he does have a little bit more power, but just since he's in such a stacked lineup where he has to hit the bottom of the lineup too much.
Yeah, I totally understand. Did you propose this trade, or was it proposed to you?
It was proposed to me.
Okay. And was this something that you took time to think about, or, you know, is this one that you're like, you know what, I want to do it right away?
Sadly, like, when I get sent to offers, like, there's not really a whole lot of, like, I don't think about it for a couple hours. Usually it's like, yes, no, like, it's decided right when I open the email or right when I look at the trade. And this was one that I was just like, yeah, it's pretty even. You know, I'd rather, let me own Yelich real quick.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain trades that you think about, but I think that any trade that you have to think about for more than a couple minutes is either something that you're going to end up rejecting, or is something that is so good / involves really, really, really good players, and you have to, like, put so much further thought into how your team will, like, post-trade, and if there's some other move that you may need to make. You know, if, like, I had a basketball trade, I understand that we're trying to deal with baseball only here, but there was a basketball trade this year. This was, I had the chance to trade DeMarcus Cousins and Chris Paul for LeBron and Kyrie Irving. And I didn't do it just because I was like, well, I don't have another center who can get me all the blocks and so on and so forth. Even though I liked the LeBron side better, I was like, well, I don't have a long-term solution for blocks.
Yeah. Oh,
I turned down the trade. 2 days later, Cousins goes down for a year. You know, it's like, well, now I need to find another solution for blocks anyway.
Yeah, I mean, when you do get proposed trades, or and you have the ones that you do have to think about, at least for me, are usually like the ones that are, you know, we're talking like post 200 players, like players that you kind of have to do a little research on and look at, kind of like a Jose Martinez type player before the year started.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you may have to do a little research, but if you don't have an answer of what you kind of want to do with him, like 10-15 minutes of looking at a trade, like if you're like just trying to do the trade and not get bothered by everyday stuff, if you don't know, then the likely chance that you end up saying no is pretty good. You know, I always have people who are like, oh, I'm going to sleep on this trade. And most people who sleep on a trade don't end up accepting, I feel.
Yeah, totally. Once they say that, you can just decline the trade and just move on.
Like, you'll get the occasional thing, and that's why I never say, okay, well, let's start working on something else. But in my own mind, I'm like, okay, the likelihood is that they say no. So I have to start working on a way to improve this offer to make them say yes, if I want to go through with this type of thing. And what am I willing to concede on to make the deal go? And sometimes that's what you have to do.
Yeah, you're basically like a car salesman. Like, you know, you can't let them leave the lot without buying a car. Like, once they leave, it's the chances of it happening are really slim.
And I can understand why people don't want to let a trade go, but sometimes it is best to let a trade go, because sometimes a player can play so well and it can increase their value. / another player could play bad and could decrease their value, could help make a trade get done as a result. You know, sometimes the time does help, but I can understand that in the moment you want to get the deal done. You don't want to let someone walk away from the table, so. Why don't we move into the next trade? And that's going to be Manny Machado and Jeff Hoffman for Cody Bellinger and David Peralta. This is a dynasty league. I don't have any more information than that. I don't know how many teams are in this league. I'm not sure if you do.
Yeah, this is a 16-teamer. We've talked about this league before. Me, Brad, and Colin are in it, and it has some really weird categories. So I don't put it in part of the description just because, like, batting average against is one of the categories. Like, it has a bunch of weird innings is a category.
Okay. Well, my initial impression is that Machado is the best player in the deal, with Bellinger being the second. I consider Hoffman to be the worst player, so it's basically a 1-4 and 2-3 deal. But I don't think that Peralta and Hoffman are really enough to push the dial either way. So my personal opinion would be that it's probably Machado, unless there's some type of hitting category that would severely work in Bellinger's favor.
I'll pull up the league real quick.
Is that the side that you would take, the Machado side or the Bellinger side?
Yeah, I would take the Machado side. He's the safer batter. I actually like David Peralta as like a bench bat. I'm not really familiar with Jeff Hoffman, but yeah, I would take the Machado side.
Yeah, I mean, right now, like I said, unless there's some hitting category that severely hurts Machado, which I can't imagine something that would hurt Machado in favor of Bellinger, because, I mean, unless it's like batting average and we have another Machado year from like last year, but I can't imagine that there's a category that Machado
is. Well, even if he did have a bad batting average year again, Bellinger would be right there anyways. But the categories are runs, RBIs, home runs, walks, stolen bases, average, and OPS.
Yeah, so nothing in there is making me favor Bellinger over Machado, except for maybe stolen bases. And it is totally dependent on if Machado actually chooses to run.
Yeah, it's literally the hardest thing to predict is when how these guys are going to steal bases. Bellinger could be the same way. He could be a guy that doesn't steal very much this year.
Exactly. There's a pretty good chance. So, is there anything with David Peralta that would make you want to try to acquire him in this type of league, considering that you're in it? Because I like Peralta, but, you know, he's just an outfielder who I'm okay with ending up with, but not someone who I'm dying to get.
No, I mean, it's just that we have a pretty deep rosters. It's 16 teams, and so some of the people you have on your bench, you know, don't play very much. I like Peralta just kind of as like a speed power guy that you can bring off the bench.
Okay. Is there anything else from this trade that you want to discuss, or I feel like we've already covered enough of it considering, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy.
Why don't we move to the next trade, and that's going to be talking about Paul Goldschmidt, Fernando Rodney, John Gray, for J.D. Martinez, Greg Bird, and Aroldis Vizcaino. This was sent in to us on Twitter. This is a 12-team roto, and you keep 12 players. So my guess would initially be that I'm going to sit on the Paul Goldschmidt side. And what is yours?
Yeah, I think I'm leaning the same way. Like all these, like Rodney and John Gray, Greg Bird, and Vizcaino are like I don't know. I feel like those guys kind of are a wash. I don't really like any of those guys very much this year. I guess I like John Gray the most, but I don't like Greg Bird or Vizcaino at all. But yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Goldie just for the stolen bases out of first base.
Well, based on initial impressions, I know a lot of leagues that when you have keepers, typically keepers aren't kept unless there's something to significantly boost them. Typically, you're going to have probably four starters that are worth keeping, you know, five or so hitters, and then the other two or three players is going to be basically where you have some type of overage. It could be a reliever, but my guess would be that Fernando Rodney and Vizcaino probably aren't closers that are kept by most teams. I guess there's a chance that it could be, but much so less Rodney than Vizcaino. I personally like John Gray more than Greg Bird just because of the injuries. And I like Goldie more than I like J.D. Martinez. So if I like two of the three players more on one side, and I can go and find a closer wherever, I would probably pick the Goldie side.
Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, just getting rid of Fernando Rodney definitely helps in all the ratios. I know that kind of sways it a little bit the other way, but I still like the Goldie side.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, even if Goldie is having trouble hitting at this point early in the year, it's not like J.D. Martinez has done anything to make you want to go to his side, but do you think that it's just because of the stolen bases from Goldie that you want to keep that side? Like, if Goldie went and turned into like a 6-steal season, would that really change anything for you?
Yeah, I think I would lean the other side if it wasn't for the stolen bases, just because you're getting more power, probably similar counting stats other than the home runs from Martinez, since they're both in pretty good lineups, you know, both hitting over 30 home runs, but JD just has the more power, probably not stealing any bases, if so a couple, but that if it was Goldie was only stealing 6 bases, then I would probably lean back the JD Martinez side just for the upside of the power.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, Goldie's a pretty healthy player, so there's a pretty good chance that he could have more runs. There's a better chance that he'll have more runs than JD Martinez anyway. They are probably pretty comparable in RBIs. I would say that JD Martinez likely has power upside, but the thing is obviously the injuries. And obviously the average in stolen bases leans on Goldie. So it really just kind of also depends on who your other keepers are. Like, if you have another pretty good first baseman, then you may be able to get away with not taking the Goldie side. Like, if you have someone who's like a... I'm sure it's unlikely, but if you have someone like an Edwin Encarnacion, you know, if you had someone like that, you could consider moving to Goldie side. But there's nothing on the JD Martinez side at this time that makes either you or I want to be able to go for that side, especially because Greg Bird is hurt and Vizcaino is probably not a top 15 closer for us.
And also, we don't know the categories for this, but if one of the categories was OBP, I think that shifts it even a lot more to the Goldie side.
He does walk a lot, so I do agree with that, because like this year he's not hitting well, but he is walking and he's not striking out. So
yeah, I think he has 9 walks already.
And I think season. 3 strikeouts, something like that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Why don't we move into the next trade, and that is going to be Giancarlo Stanton, DJ LeMahieu, and Sean Doolittle for Jonathan Scope and Chris Bryant. This is the same league that you're in with the 6 keepers, 10 teams. It's a 6x6, head-to-head with total bases and 3 outfielders, I believe. So my initial impression is Chris Bryant, and I don't think it's close.
Yeah, I'm also – that's what I'm also thinking. Before we started, I was like, it's hard to stay away from the hype that surrounds Stanton, and now that he's playing in New York, it's like he's the most polarizing player in the MLB. But I mean, you're getting Chris Bryant, who's a top 10 borderline first rounder also, and then Jonathan Scope. I don't really like owning DJ LeMahieu for the lack of power and just stats outside of batting average.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you're going to pick a second baseman, I'm leaning Scope, and there's a pretty big difference. Even though there is total bases involved, I think that Scope had a good enough year last year, and it's something that's repeatable. And I understand that LeMahieu gets on base and gets a lot of bases. But at the same point in time, I think that Bryant is already a better dynasty / keeper option than Stanton in general, mainly because of the age and the health, and because he has the ability to be an MVP candidate every single year, and he can do very similar stuff to what Stanton does. And if Stanton stays healthy, I think Stanton has a little more upside, but I would still prefer Bryant because I think he's a better overall player, and there's less of a batting average risk with him. You also are likely to get more steals. So I think because of that, I don't think that Doolittle's enough to make me go with the Giancarlo side. And if you can only have six keepers, Doolittle's likely not a keeper, and I can't imagine that LeMahieu is. So it's basically two keepers for one, because I would consider Scope a potential keeper, depending on how the rest of my team is. But there's a better chance that he's a keeper than DJ LeMahieu.
Yeah, I mean, if it was just Bryant for Stanton, what side would you take?
Probably still would take the Bryant side, but it's close, only for the fact that, like, if I had a team and I needed the upside, I would probably go with Stanton. But I think that there's a higher floor for Bryant, and I also think that Bryant's probably the better player in general, so it would be tough for me to actually pass on Bryant.
Yeah, and then if you do Scope for the LeMahieu and Doolittle,
I would still take Scope, and I'm pretty sure that even if you added, like, you'd have to add like a pretty decent third player, and that's probably like a top 120 player just to make me even part ways with Scope, because I'm pretty sure that if I remember my board correctly, I would have both LeMahieu and Doolittle outside my top 150. So, and I would have Scope as a top maybe 80 player, maybe a little better. But obviously, like, there's only 10 teams, so there's roughly, you're keeping the top 60 players. So Scope is already a borderline player to keep, but I still wouldn't trade Scope for two players outside my top 150.
Yeah, I really don't like DJ LeMahieu, especially in a 10-teamer. I can understand it in deeper leagues just because he's a starting second baseman, but I don't really like owning him when the only thing he's bringing to the table is batting average.
Exactly. I mean, it is a benefit when total basis is involved, but I mean, he'll still score runs, but there's not going to be a ton of upside coming from a TJ LeMahieu side, so. Alrighty, Donnie, why don't we take a quick break and we'll have a message from our sponsor and we will be right back. If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. All right, Donnie, well, we have a couple more trades to go through, so why don't we go through one that I had just completed earlier this week. This is a 16-team Dynasty Roto that has OBP and quality starts in place of wins and average. So I traded Acuna and a pick, a second-round pick. The pick isn't really as important, but the trade is basically Ronald Acuna for Brian Dozier, Cole Hamels, and Wellington Castillo. What side do you have?
I feel like we're always talking Acuna trades. Like I think
Don't
over
worry,
half
next
the
year
trades
is going to be Vlad. It's all going to be Vlad
and Bo
Bichette, and it will be like Tristan McKenzie and certain. There's going to be players next year that are talked about, but definitely Vlad is going to be a trade next year.
Yeah, we're always going to be talking about the top prospects for players trades. Yeah, but I think we've talked about this on the group chat, and yeah, I do like the side you got, the Dozier side. I don't really like Cole Hamels that much anymore, but in a 16-teamer, it's definitely somebody that's worth having and has some value. And the thing with Dozier is I think he has 4 home runs as of today. Like, usually he's the guy that starts off slow and then has this crazy second half. Now he's starting out hot and, you know, people are joking that he's going to go like 50-20 or something. But anyways, you're still going to get, you know, 30 home runs and 15 stolen bases from Dozier. Hamels will be solid as long as he's healthy, and then you get a catcher. starting catcher.
That's the thing. This is a two-catcher league, so I kind of forgot to add that. It's a two-catcher league. Now, I don't necessarily need a catcher. At this time, I do, but I have Real Muto and Zunino, but they're both on a DL. So I personally like both of them more than I like Wellington Castillo, but I still think that it's good that I'm able to have three potential catchers I could rotate in at any time, and they're all, I don't know, top 10 to top 12 options in a two-catcher league. So I think that that is a good benefit there. But then it's like you were saying, we seem to always have a trade that involves a top prospect. And, you know, I've held on to Acuna for the better part of a year. And I held on to him. I declined Acuna for Donaldson trade. I turned it into an Acuna for Dozier, Hamilton, Castillo trade. And I think that's a little better. Because basically, I had two players on my team who I had to try to cut, and I didn't. There was no one on the waiver wire because I had been outbid on both the players who I was trying to go for. So if I had to drop two players, I would rather add someone like Hamilton Castillo than drop them, drop the players I was looking for, and add someone like a Garrett Cooper or something like that, because there's just not a lot of room on the waiver wire. So I think that the trade was a benefit in that sense, especially because I think that Dozier could be good. And at second base, I didn't have a healthy second baseman because I had Kinsler on the bench because I had nine players on my DL.
So was it worth holding on to Acuna for a year?
Yeah, because last year I was in a rebuild state, and I had no issues holding on to him because it ended up me – it turned into me having – being able to pick up players like Hoskins, Ian Happ. I had Acuna. I was able to draft Ohtani because of my draft position. I was able to turn Hoskins and Happ plus another player into Arenado. So basically, I've now just from my rebuild, I went and was able to get Arenado, Ohtani, Dozier as three good players on top of having Rizzo and Machado plus DeGrom. So I was happy with it.
So you tanked, basically?
I didn't tank. I had inherited I had taken over a team that was not in good position, so.
Guess it worked out.
It did work out. You know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But the year before, I think the team had finished, like, in 10th place or 9th place, 8th place, somewhere in that range. So it's like right in the middle. And it's like, well, you know, you don't have the pieces to compete. So kind of blow some stuff up and kind of like do a mini rebuild. And, you know, 1 year later, you're competing. So
retooling, not rebuilding.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm like the Yankees over here. I'm a retooling team. I'm not the...
You're not the 76ers?
Yeah. But the 76ers at least turned out good. You know, I'm trying to think of a team that says that they're rebuilding, that they're bad for like 30 years.
What about the Marlins?
Yeah, could be the Marlins, or we could say I would like to say I'm the Texas Rangers as a shot to Colin Weatherwax, but he's probably not even listening to his own podcast, so I don't know if it's really a shot at him if he's not listening. But yes. That's the thing, you know, if you're able to retool, then it's good. So there is benefits. All right, why don't we move into the next trade, and it's going to be Tony Pham, Yu Darvish, Edwin Encarnacion for Clayton Kershaw and Yoenis Cespedes. This is a 10-team points league, so obviously we understand the value that a player like Clayton Kershaw can have, and other starters for that matter. But Darvish is it's a pretty good pitcher in his own right, not in the same tier as Kershaw. But I believe that both Pham and Encarnacion are significantly ahead of where Cespedes are and probably cover the gap of what the Kershaw side would have given up. So I know that you had been in this trade, you traded Kershaw away. What was your thought process behind trading Clayton Kershaw away?
So this is my first points league I've ever been in, and having Kershaw, you know, is a really big thing. Is, you know, he's probably going to lead the league in points, So it was hard to trade him, but it was also hard to pass up this deal at the same time. And I don't know, I guess I kind of figured that Darvish would give me 70%, close to maybe 75% of what Kershaw will do. And then getting rid of Cespedes was somebody I really didn't want to own and have as my starting outfielder in a 10-team league. He's always hurt. I really don't trust what the Mets do, especially with injuries. So getting rid of him was a plus. And then I do like Pham. He's a good speed power guy, and I do believe in him as long as he stays healthy, which that's been the problem with him and why he's finally just now breaking out. And Encarnacion's just, you know, he's just his regular self, always hitting home runs.
Yeah, I personally like the Pham side because Encarnacion is going to be a good hitter, and he takes a bunch of walks still to counteract any strikeouts. Obviously, it's not an even split, but he does take enough walks to be able to help neutralize some of the strikeouts that he will take. Tony Pham is a good power speed guy, like you were saying, and he's hitting at the top of the lineup, so there can be runs for him to be had also. Obviously, Cespedes is able to be healthy. He's a pretty good player, but given the last couple of years, you're giving up the injury concerns and curse on Cespedes for someone like Darvish, who's been good at times, been bad at times, and Edwin Encarnacion, who's been very good for the last multiple years, and Tony Pham, who kind of came out of nowhere last year, but everyone kind of expects it to be something that can stick around given the type of profile that he has. So I don't have any issues with you trading Kershaw away, and obviously trading Kershaw away in a points league is very tough. But I think overall, from what you're able to do on a daily basis and from a weekly matchup in points, I think that the guys that you acquired are able to outscore the players that you gave up.
Yeah, and it was something that we're talking about like looking into trades more, doing like research, you know, and a lot of times I just decide right when I see the offer. And this was one where it was like, I asked like you guys in the chat and stuff, cause I really didn't know what to do. And like, I've never been in a points league, so I didn't really understand how many points like Kershaw will have, you know, every time he's pitching. He'll put up 20 points a lot of the times he's pitching.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it's tough to say exactly what is going to happen at any given time with Kershaw, because Kershaw's able to have a great start, and in a points league that I'm in that I own him, he could put up 34 points, 35 points, and that's fantastic considering that on average, most good hitters put up 4 points a game, and if you have 4 games a week, that's 24 points. Kershaw's able to outscore that by himself with one start, and if you have him in a two-start league, if he's able to get you 50 points in a two-start league, I mean, that's amazing himself. So, obviously, Kershaw is someone that I would always want to try to have in a points league while he's got the status as being a top-tier pitcher. And considering that I've done points leagues a lot, and a lot of people say that I'm one of the few people to go talk to about points leagues because not a lot of people do them, I would still side with what you did and take Tony Pham and Yu Darvish. So why don't we move into our last trade of the evening? And this is a trade that we were given by a Twitter listener, Jorge. And I apologize if I botched his last name. But Montanez, I probably botched it. Just sounding it out, I probably botched it significantly, so I apologize. But based on the information he stated, it was a 10-team points league, and he said he made this trade before the season started. So my guess would be that it's a redraft league. If it's a keeper / dynasty league, my opinion doesn't change a ton, but I can understand why you may want to change it. But the trade is Bryce Harper, Matt Olson, Justin Marshall for Joey Votto, Justin Upton, and James Paxton. Now, obviously, because of how Bryce Harper has played this early part of the season, there's reason to think that maybe you made a bad move, but I personally still like the Votto side because of the floor, the consistency. At the end of the year, you're still going to be there with those players, and you're probably going to have the better side because we don't know what Olsen's going to do, and I'm not a big Samardzija guy. But what are your thoughts, Donnie?
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much summed it up with what you were saying. The floor is just so good for the Votto, Upton, Paxton side. I mean, Votto and Upton are pretty much as consistent as you get with those two. Paxton is opposite of consistent, but he's elite when he is pitching. I can't say that about Jeff Samardzija. The only thing he does that's elite is, I guess, strike guys out and have. I mean, is he elite? I guess he's elite for having a high ERA. And then, Olsen's he's a big hitter, but unproven. You know, he kind of had like the Hoskins type second half last year. No one really knows what to predict from him. He had the two doubles last year, and he hit 32 home runs. So that's some people are worried about him, about his power, because he only had the two doubles, which is kind of silly. But yeah, Harper does this every year. You know, he had the record for most opening day home runs or something like that.
Yeah, something of that nature. I can't remember exactly what the stat is, but it was something that it's like you don't want to deal with Bryce Harper on opening day. That's basically all I remember.
I think he had five home runs in the last three opening days or something like that. And now he's, you know, these first 2 weeks of the season, he's playing well again. And then he'll get hurt in a couple months probably and miss significant time. And then you'll be happy you did trade him.
For me, even if it's a dynasty or a keeper league, obviously I love Bryce Harper in those type of leagues, but if Matt Olson turns out to be a bad player and Samardzija, even at his best, he's not a great points league guy because he still gets a lot of hits and earned runs. Yeah, he gets strikeouts and he doesn't walk people, but he's still not a top 25, top 30 pitcher in the points league. And I've done points league for many years. So unless you have some other stat that's propelling him up those lists, I can't see it. So it could very well end up being Harper for those three players, and I just can't side with Harper there because of how good Joey Votto is in a points league, how good James Paxton can be in a points league, and how good Justin Upton can be in a points league. So,
is walks usually 1 point?
Usually, walks and hits are a point depending on the type of league. And a strikeout could be minus one. So a walk and a strikeout for someone like Joey Votto, who walks a ton, who gets like 100 walks a year, maybe strikes out 120, that could be only a difference of minus 20 for the year between walks and strikeouts. And for someone who can add 175 hits, you know, obviously you're going to have a lot of points from that. Doubles could be points, extra bases could be points, home runs, RBIs, runs. He's going to be able to be a good run producer, steals. So, you know, I've seen leagues where steals are 3 points and getting caught stealing is minus one. So someone like Upton isn't in a bad spot because he may still have, you know, a couple steals during the year, and Harper may, you know, only have two, three, four, you know. There may be a big difference between that stuff, but there's a lot more value with Paxton than Samardzija for me. And at first base, I would personally take Votto over Olsen 100 times over. Obviously, you would take Harper over Upton, but I think the three players on the Paxton side outweigh the three players on the Harper side.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you've said about it. I wouldn't be upset about this trade. I know it's always hard to trade Bryce Harper. Like we talk about it with Trout, how it feels like you always lose a trade when you trade one of those top guys, especially if it's a dynasty league. It's always so hard to trade those big time talents. But I think this is the one trade where it is worth it.
Exactly, and there's not a lot of times, but personally, you know, it takes a lot. You have to basically overpay to get a player like that, and I felt that this is an overpay. And if this is a redraft, then I really wouldn't worry much about it, because even if Bryce Harper goes out and has, you know, the best season he can have, when he had his MVP season a couple years ago, that was as good as it could, as good as it seemed for Bryce Harper. And I still think that if I was getting what I can expect from Votto, Paxton, and Upton, I still think that those guys will outweigh what Harper is able to do, plus Olsen, plus Samardzija. Olsen would basically need to do what he did all of last year, plus a little bit more, just to make me even consider that I made a bad deal. All right, Donnie, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter and what you're working on?
So it's at Donnie Miller, FWFB, and hopefully we'll be doing this show every week if Colin and Brad ever, you know, make an appearance. And I'll be working on a couple articles for the site coming up soon.
And you can find me on Twitter at BBrandsFWFB. You can find me on the Kuhn and Friends podcast, which is the Wednesday show, joined by Ray Kuhn and Evan Peterson. You can also find me and Eric Mackey on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast as we're wrapping up the basketball season. Feel free to keep sending us trades on Twitter or through the Facebook groups or through emails to the website for anything trade-related, any questions that you have. We would love to be able to answer them on the show. And from the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball season, everyone.